You're listening to Gameplay with Matthew Kaws on TSN 1050. We're going all in on the coverage. You can bet on it.
Welcome back, everybody. This is Gameplay. I'm your host, Matthew Kaws. Joining me on the line, he's a writer for the Toronto Star. He is an excellent analyst on the NHL on TSN broadcast. It is Dave Poulin. And Dave, thanks so much for joining the show today.
My pleasure, Matt. I don't usually get introduced as a writer first. It's quite a statement on your part.
I wanted to mix it up.
You did mix it up. Okay, if I'm a writer,
yeah.
The big issue of the day isn't either writing or analysis, very rarely. It's what to watch tonight and whether you jump back into a series when you've been watching hockey four games a night for 2 weeks. You don't even know where you were in your respective Netflix life. And you just jump back in one night knowing tomorrow night you're picking up full steam again and you're not going to watch anything again. So really complex problem of a Monday, Matt.
It really is. I would say, maybe you could talk to one of your fellow colleagues, Peter Howell, who I think is an entertainment reporter for the Toronto Star. Maybe go with a movie. I would not suggest. Go with a movie, because I was thinking, I could start the final half of Ozark. But you're right. Then come Tuesday, you got two NHL playoff games. You got the NBA Eastern and Western Conference Finals. So I say, Dave, do a movie tonight.
Yeah, I think that's a good call, because you don't know where you were in the series anyway.
Yeah,
and you're just going to have it for a short period of time. So I'll take your expert advice on that. Thank you.
So I got so much stuff to get to, but let's start here. How difficult is it as an executive the day after such an emotionally crippling loss? How difficult is it to move forward and make the best decisions and try to do those decisions devoid of emotion?
Start with the short term. It's incredibly numbing. And there is so much that still has to be done in terms of the wrap-up of the year, exit interviews, depending on who's involved in those, all the different logistical things, medical situations, you're involved in, you know, getting full reports on who medically needs what done, when all that is going to happen. You know, you've got a looming draft, you've got looming free agency. You've got so many different issues, but you have to close out this year technically, and that is with the exit interview. So that becomes the priority, that and the medical side of it, before you can even get into the other stuff, and let alone all the logistical things that have to be done at this time of year that deal with everything else with running a hockey team. So, but it is so numbing, because you weren't letting yourself go there going into a game seven.
Right.
And you were dealing with what you were dealing with, and you weren't projecting. Just as, Matt, when I watched particularly Morgan Rielly speak after game seven, it's not a speech you've prepared. It's not thoughts you've allowed yourself to think, because in no possible way were you losing that game. So those are usually really heartfelt and raw emotions that come out from the players at that point, simply because there's no way they were going to lose. There's no way they were going to have to make that talk with the reporters. And it's really challenging, because you have to, it's business as usual for everything else, except it's not.
Yeah. Well, God. So then here's the classic question now. Shake it up versus stay the course. And there is the regular season was incredible. The team had 115 points, and they lost to Tampa. Everyone loses to Tampa. They pushed Tampa harder than any other team in the last 2 years. The other side is, every time there's a big game in the playoffs, the Leafs lose, and they usually don't score many goals. And by shake it up, I don't mean one specific name, but you got to move at least, you know, at the very least, a Jake Muzzin and his $5 million. So we'll do that as the sort of baseline of what shake it up means. So, Dave, in your mind, the shake it up or stay the course, where do you go?
Well, you're going to have to shake it up to a certain degree, simply because you can't walk it back with this team. You simply can't. Financially, it's not a possibility. And you're going to have to make significant changes, you know, just off the strength of take Morgan Rielly. He's going to make $2.5 million more next year. Where is that money going to come from? If Jack Campbell is going to make more than $1.65 million next year, where is that money going to come from? And, you know, is Ilya Mikheyev going to be a Toronto Maple Leaf because he makes 1.6 and he's going to want a significant raise? Andre Kasha is an RFA and he came on a bargain, you know, contract. Pierre Engvall, you know, scores at a new rate for him and he was making 1.25. So there's so many different factors that can into play just with your regular, you know, building. I mean, you've got two UFA defensemen, Mark Giordano and Ilya Lyubushkin, who both seem to fit in pretty well. And, you know, are you going to bring Mark Giordano back and what's that going to cost? And can you just, you know, everybody wants to assume, well, he's going to accept a real friendly veteran contract, is he? And Ilya Lyubushkin, who was a really great find, and certainly credit to the pro scouting staff that, you know, dug him up from Arizona, and that's a tough viewing spot to start with in terms of how he might fit in. But he's an unrestricted free agent. He's 28 years old, you know, and he was making 1.35, and that's going to change. So you can't walk back the same team that you played in Game 7 against Tampa simply because it's not feasible. So change is going to happen. The question is, are you going to change a more significant piece? And you mentioned a Jake Muzzin type of player, and that's what you're going to have to evaluate. You would certainly assume that Morgan Riley and TJ Brody, you know, are locks, and TJ Brody's, you know, outperforms his money and is steady and does everything right, is 31 years old. But Jake Muzzin has been banged up, and, you know, and is, he would be the second highest paid defenseman on your team next year. So you've got lots of decisions to make, Matt. The big one is, are you going to mess with the top four up front? And if you are, and then I said this on air right after the game, and obviously I don't just throw things out, the most attractive piece to move for you and, you know, and everyone involved is Willie Nylander, simply because you can't with John Tavares. You know, he's got a full no move contract, and you're likely not even considering Austin Matthews or Mitch Marner. So that leaves Willie Nylander. And when I say that, I'm not being vindictive in any way about Willie Nylander or his play or his points or his production or his performance related to his dollars. It's just that that's the piece that you can most easily move that will bring back something significant in turn, which changes the core of your hockey team. And if you choose to change the core, that's going to be the piece that changes it.
I often find, Dave, especially social media, because nothing polarizes like William Nylander, and everyone gets angry when you bring it up. But I always look at it like this way, and we'll move on from this point, but I was thinking like this. Whenever the conversation was about trading Nylander, I never looked at it as a slap at him. I looked at it more of a tip of the cap, because that guy is so good and is so valuable. There would be teams lining up to give you back lots and lots of stuff because that's how good Nylander is. I never look at it as a negative against him.
And that's exactly right. And, you know, I was there when the Leafs drafted him, and I can still remember the conversations with Tommy Bergman, who was the Swedish scout, and he said, this very well may be the most talented player in the draft. And, you know, and there are going to be things to work through. And there's still things to work through, but his talent speaks for itself. And so, but the question is, does a core group change through aging alone, or have you viewed it enough over the course of six playoff losses to say it's not going to change? It's simply not. We've said each year that, well, the year of experience, the year of maturing age-wise. So two things happen, right? The team is maturing and the individual is maturing. And is that combination going to change the outcome? So far, it hasn't. And so, but walking it back truly intact isn't going to happen. So are you going to walk it back, you know, with the same core four? And certainly it's a viable option.
Yep. No, and we'll find it in the next couple months. And we play the song and dance again and again. Joined by Dave Poulin, NHL and TSN analyst, and, of course, noted writer with the Toronto Star. Dave, I've seen things on text where people are talking about, hey, you know, Connor McDavid got it done, Austin Matthews didn't. And that's true. And Connor McDavid was incredible, and his production was incredible. But I think we always need to put, and I'm curious your thoughts, we have to put things in context. And I'm a firm believer in the idea of degree of difficulty. Toronto had a better season than Calgary and Edmonton. Calgary faced a team that was -8 in goal differential. Meanwhile, it took Edmonton 7 games to get past a Kings team that was +3 in goal differential with 36-year-old Jonathan Quick. That's not exactly Vasilevsky and the Lightning. It's not an excuse, but it's a fact. That of the three Canadian teams, one had a far higher degree of difficulty than the others.
Well, it's just the luck of the draw.
Yeah, it is. Oh, absolutely it is. And I think that's where the anger comes from. People are upset at just bad luck.
You know, you might not want to be, you know, you might be in 3 years, you might be bemoaning the fact of how good Ottawa, Detroit, and Buffalo are, man. And that's simply the cycle of the game. And you might say, what happened to Boston in 3 years? Who knows? And, you know, and we went through it in the Patrick division and we went through it in the Eastern Conference, you know, when I was playing and said, well, you know, if you get out of Patrick, you're going to do well. And okay, well, you get out of the Patrick, you went to the finals. You know, and so those are arguments are always going to be the same. You know, somebody has an easier path, somebody has an easier task. And I would say, well, you know, the reason the Leafs are as good as they are is because they have to be to compete during the regular season, and they're so seasoned from competing in the East, and it's the same thing that makes it how hard it is to get out of the East.
It is, and the thing is, I always want to stress with people, it's not about creating excuses or woe is me. It's just I'm going to push back when someone goes, look what McDavid did and Matthews didn't, because I don't think it puts into full context the degree of difficulty upon which one team had to deal with versus another.
Yeah, no question about it. It's, you know, I mean, you could also say Tampa brought out the best in Toronto. I mean, it was a really well-played series. And it's an easy thing to say, but you just have to find a way to get it done. And Connor McDavid found a way to get it done out west. And you know, there's different layers too, Matt, because I don't just put it on the core four. You know, you look at Calgary, well, it was Johnny Gaudreau in their last two wins. One with the game winner and on the penalty shot and one in overtime.
That was incredible.
Yeah, for the Rangers, Artemi Panarin comes through in the seventh game. But for Tampa, it was Nick Paul. You know, who's an unrestricted free agent who they picked up at the trade deadline. He's only been at Tampa Bay Lightning for a month and a half. And chooses, you know, to have a huge game in game 7 and put his mark on it. So it comes in all different ways. And, you know, when you're preparing, like during game 7, when we were putting our piece together and it was, you know, looking more and more like I was going to get the Nick Paul piece, you know, I wanted to make it clear that this wasn't directed at the core four in Toronto. It was directed at the next layer because someone at the next layer had come through for Tampa. Someone in the next layer for the Leafs had to make sure that they were going to match that, whether it be Kasha, Kampf, or Bunting, or, you know, one of the next tier of players wasn't able to match what Nick Paul did.
And the third line for Tampa found a way to get it done. And again, we're here again as we were last year. Before we go, end with this. Do you need a recommendation? Is there a movie you're thinking of watching? Like is there a theme for you? A favorite genre?
Don't know what's out there yet. Something to not immerse me too deeply. It would have to be fairly lighthearted. So we'll surf around. We'll figure something out, Matt.
All right. I was going to recommend Jaws, but it's not very lighthearted. So maybe don't listen to me.
Slam on that beach. I'm not going there.
To me, it's a perfect film. Hey, Dave, love it. Always love when you take time to join the show. All the best, my friend. We will talk soon and enjoy the night off. Enjoy the night off, my friend.
Certainly, bro. Thanks, Matt. Have a great day and enjoy the hockey.
Take care. That is Dave Poulin. All right, we got to take a break. On the other side, we'll get back into some of the sound from the last couple days. We'll hear from Matthews and Marner and Keefe. But first, it is time now for traffic. Before we get back into the NHL and NBA playoffs, by the way, good afternoon, everyone. This is Gameplay. I'm your host, Matthew Cause. It's going to be so weird at the end of this week. The PGA Championship is coming up. The defending champ is Phil Mickelson, and he will not be part of it. He's kind of gone rogue after his comments about Saudi Arabia and just about his work that he's doing with this upstart professional golf tour, LIV Golf. And since 1960, only five major champions have not defended their title the next year. 1960, a guy named Art Wall, because of kidney ailment. Payne Stewart. That was the tragic one. He was killed in a plane crash. Tiger Woods, because of an ACL. Roy McIlroy, because of a high ankle sprain. All of them, they missed it because of, injury. For Phil Mickelson, it's not at all about injury, except for maybe an injury to his character, and it's just going to be so strange. And we'll get into this later in the week, but the fall from grace. A year ago, Phil Mickelson was a hero, oldest major champion. I had it as one of my top stories of the year. And now no one can seem to find him, and a lot of people don't want him found. And this golf report is brought to you by your Ontario Subaru dealers. Whatever the weather throws your way, you're covered in a new Subaru with uncommon capability and symmetrical full-time all-wheel drive. Let's get to a couple pieces of sound from the Maple Leafs, and let's start with Austin Matthews talking about the team being right up there.
Yeah, I mean, it's the back-to-back Stanley Cup champions right there, and that's a team that's been through a lot as well. They've been through a lot of tough losses, heartbreak, and they've climbed their way to the top 2 years in a row now. So, we're right there, right there.
And I agree with almost everything except for the final part. You're not right there. You've never won in the first round. And usually when you get eliminated, which is every time, you're setting records for the most times being eliminated in a do-or-die first-round game. That is no blip. Some years embarrassing losses, some years to the Bruins, and now this to Tampa. So to say you're right there is inaccurate. And there's no one way to process what happened. And I think most people, you can have both minds. You can go, yeah, the Leafs pushed Tampa harder than any other team has in the playoffs the last couple of years, but they still lost again in the first round. Both those things are true. And also, Chris, I'm hearing the Kawhi Leonard analogy. And I get it. It's time for the Maple Leafs to do what Masai Ujiri did, take a big swing. Raptors were close, but never really that close. Even they went six games against LeBron in Cleveland, all four of Cavs' wins were blowout fashion. The problem with that is, who's the Kawhi Leonard? Who's the Kawhi Leonard out there you're getting back? And also, I mean, that deal was crazy because in terms of just pure talent, DeMar DeRozan for Kawhi Leonard, woof, that's a bad deal for San Antonio.
That's a big gulf there, yeah.
Yeah,
and,
like,
you know, with the parallel, I see some parallels between the Kawhi thing and the Masai thing and what's going on with the Leafs right now. But I don't know. They were talking about it on Leafs Lunch today, and they already kind of have their Kawhi. They have Austin Matthews. They don't need a best player on their team. So I get where that sort of analogy is coming from, but I don't know. I don't really buy that.
I don't buy it either. I don't. And I think, you know, a lot of this, it's not about the player. It's about, there's got to be a new approach. And you have to just ask the question, why is it at the biggest moments in the playoffs, there's one constant? And that's the Leafs come up short. So, by the way, because we haven't done a lot of betting on today's show, there was a Dallas parlay that nearly paid off. If you parlayed the Dallas Stars and the Dallas Mavericks, you got that at plus 851. And the Mavericks did the job, and the Dallas Stars got into overtime. So anyone who did that deal was feeling really good until Matthew Tkachuk, or excuse me, Johnny Gaudreau, set up by Matthew Tkachuk, got it done. And also, if you look at the theme yesterday in the NHL, who got it done? The Stars. And by that, I don't mean Dallas. I mean players. Rangers win 4-3 in overtime over the Penguins. Game-winning goal, Artturi Panarin. Who set it up? Adam Fox and Mika Zibanejad. Igor Shesterkin, 42 saves. Calgary Flames. Who tied it? Matthew Tkachuk, set up by Johnny Gaudreau. And who won it? Johnny Gaudreau. Again, both things can be true. Toronto Stars do not show up as much as Calgary Stars or Connor McDavid. That is true. And it's also true that the Maple Leafs played Tampa and these other teams faced far inferior competition. We got to take a break. On the other side, we're going to go the complete opposite direction of playoff talk. The CFL is on strike. Dave Naylor, our CFL and football insider, is going to join us to give us the latest of what is going on now and what does he expect to happen over the next month. Because rookie training camp was the other day. Training camps are supposed to open up all across Canada this week, and it's not happening. That's coming up in a moment, but first, time now for a News Talk 1010 traffic update.
This is Gameplay.
Can I get in on that?
On TSN 1050.
You broke his thumbs.
It was an accident.
Well, is that what you call it when somebody doesn't pay up?
We're going all in on the coverage. You can bet on it.
Welcome back, everybody. This is Gameplay. I'm your host, Matthew Cause. And all I want to do is get ready for the start of the CFL season, especially now that the Leafs are out. I got more time for other sports. I can't wait to bet the under on the totals for the Ottawa Red Blacks. But now everything is in a bit of chaos. We are joined now by our CFL and football insider. It is Dave Naylor. Dave, thanks so much for joining the show today.
Good to be with you, Matthew.
And we had the Argonauts, Andrew Harris, Brandon Banks, okay, we'll get that in a second. But first, where are we, Dave, right now? What is the latest in terms of the negotiations between the players and the owners?
There are no negotiations.
Last one was scheduled on Saturday, correct?
Yeah, they broke off talks on Saturday. I don't believe, there's been nothing scheduled, nothing formal. I haven't even been able to confirm, kind of informal one-on-one conversations across the sides. The players are, in their dorms being fed. They can't use the weight room. They can't use the facilities. And we are, on the countdown to the cancellation of the first preseason game, which is scheduled for next Monday. Winnipeg at Saskatchewan. I'm led to believe that unless there's a CBA in about the next 48 hours, that game will be canceled. And then, we'll see where we go from there. But this is unprecedented territory for the CFL. And after, I think there's a lot of fatigue being felt by fans, who had to live through, are we going to play or not play in 2020? And then the shortened season in 21. And then now as COVID appears to be moving out of the picture, at least as it applies to football, we have labor disruption.
How much acrimony is there between the two sides?
It's really hard to tell. I mean, these two sides know each other so well. They negotiated a CBA in 2019. They had to renegotiate the CBA in 2020 to prepare to play. Then they had to renegotiate it again in 2021 when they actually played, because there were all kinds of things that had to be adjusted, it's when you scaled back the season and the revenues and the pay scales and all that. So it's not like these sides don't know each other. I think there's frustration. I don't know if there's real acrimony. I think there's a lot of this to feels like for the players is, we've been beaten in past CBAs. We missed a year of wages. We missed a partial year of wages. If we don't stand up for ourselves at some point, we never will. I think there's a strong sort of spiritual element to this for the players, as well as the practical element.
And people can go to tsn.ca and read Dave's latest work on the negotiations and where we are. What are the top two issues or the top two roadblocks to getting a deal done?
I think the one that comes up is revenue sharing, and basically what the league has promised is a guarantee of a salary cap going up at least $100,000 a year. Okay, that's the guarantee. But there's a formula that if league revenues are rising, the players would share in that. And if their share of it exceeds $100,000, then that would be the application for the salary cap. So if you have a really good revenue sharing arrangement and the league has a really good year, instead of the cap going up $100,000, it might go up $200,000. Okay.
Right.
As you might imagine, trying to project how that's going to work is a matter of some disagreement. Right, that you've got the minimum guarantee in there, $100,000 a year, but is that revenue sharing model that you've created actually going to bring you anything in excess of $100,000 a year, or are the targets unrealistic? And we're actually, you know, trying to look into the future here, so there's no definite answer. It's all about probabilities and perceptions, and the sense is, and I'm kind of generalizing this, is that the players may look at that model and say, we're not sure that's really going to be an effective model. And the league is looking at it and saying, we think we've given you an effective model. And there may be some disputes about what revenue streams should be counted and which can't. It's all dry economic stuff. But I think that is where the majority of the concerns may lie. There's issues related to player health and safety and things like that as well. But, you know, it's, That seems to be where, as much as we can figure, you know, why this deal isn't signed.
So it's a good old fashioned labor lockout issue where, again, it's over revenue sharing and financial transparency. So then that leads me to my next question, Dave. Whenever there is any sort of lockout, holdout, strike, whatever you want to call it, everyone gets angry at the commissioner. How much vitriol should we all have at Randy Ambrosi, or should it be our negativity should be directed elsewhere?
Well, and you're right about the terms that we hear, you know, transparency and revenue streams, whether it's whatever league it is, the CFL or the NFL or the NHL,
doesn't matter.
The zeros are different, you know?
Yeah.
And the issues and the dynamics are exactly the same. So, look, commissioners are always seen as villains in work stoppages. I can't think of a single one where the commissioner was not seen, you know, as the bad guy. And Randy Ambrosi is the representative of the owners. I think Farhan Lalji, my colleague, reported last week that Randy was not present at most of the bargaining sessions near the very end. Like, they have a bargaining team. You know, it's not Randy Ambrosi sitting there at the table pounding his fist on how his vision of the league must be executed. They have a bargaining team, which is informed and empowered, you know, by the owners and the various committees that they have set up to handle collective bargaining. No question the commissioner's leadership is a part of that. But I think in most situations, and certainly in this one, there's a lot more hands on the league's direction here than that just of the commissioner.
When I know it's hard to predict this, but how long do you think this will go on? Or how about this? How many preseason games are we going to miss?
I'm going to say one. Mm-hmm. You know, I wrote a column about a week ago saying, you know, if training camps don't start on time, it'll be the first shocker of the 2022 CFL season. Okay. So, okay, we had a shocker. We're on strike.
Yeah.
But again, I think you have to look at it and say, you know, what's the pressure point for the start of training camp for the players? Not really one, right? As time goes on and you start to get closer to the possibility of losing real game checks, that's a pressure point for the players. As training camp shortens, there may be players who feel like their opportunity is slipping away because there's only going to be half a training camp for them to audition instead of a full training camp. That could be pressure on the players.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, and there's going to be pressure on the owners as well, who very much want to get back to the business of playing football. Their business basically grinds to a halt, you know, at this time. So, you know, there are pressure points are going to increase as we go along here. And I just feel like they shouldn't have to increase that much on, you know, either or both sides to get a deal done here.
And the first preseason game technically is scheduled for a week today, Winnipeg at Saskatchewan. And then after that, the full slate is on Friday, May 27th, Argonauts at Ottawa.
And back to pressure points, Matt, just one more that I'll mention on the owner's side is,
yeah,
when preseason games are canceled, the owners lose. They don't pay full wages for preseason games, and yet season ticket holders pay full prices, and you get concessions and such. So, you know, when you look at, I mentioned pressure points on each side are going to start to kick in. The, you know, the first one on the owners can kick in on Monday.
Yep, and that is a week today. All right, Dave, let's end this on a more happy and conventional note. The Argonauts, certainly with the big splash, Jagerrid Davis on defensive line, Andrew Harris at running back, and Brendan Banks as returner, but probably more as a receiver. For Argonaut fans out there, and they want to ignore CBA talk, How excited should they be about this upcoming season?
I think the Argonauts have a very exciting team. And look, I think people kind of forget that they won the East last year. I mean, it was not a runaway to the East, and they certainly had room for improvement and consistency. But this was the team that finished first in the East last year. I think they've made it, a number of additions, as you mentioned, Garrett Davis and Andrew Harris being the most, the headline grabbing, but there are others as well. And I think there's some people, excited seeing what the backup quarterback can do in Chad Kelly, nephew of Buffalo Bills great Jim Kelly. He's a guy who I can tell you, in having conversations with people across the league, his name has come up often, and people have often said to me, if Chad Kelly ever comes to this league, watch out. So we'll see. That's intriguing as well. And even though he's McLeod Bethel Thompson is certainly going to be the starting quarterback, this year, he we'll see if Chad Kelly can challenge him for some playtime during the year. That's intriguing as well.
Yeah, he had a up and down, but a pretty interesting collegiate career, and he's a very confident fella, which always makes for good headlines. So here's hoping for we can see him. And it's nothing against MBT. We all love McLeod Bethel Thompson, who gives the most philosophical answers to any question out there. Hey, Dave, it's a pleasure. Thank you very much for just giving us the latest update. At some point we needed a bit of a cleanse from the Maple Leafs. And actually, unfortunately, we're being cleansed with CBA talk. But still, we're talking football and not the Leafs. So we needed a bit of a break.
Matt, good to talk to you. And I look forward to seeing you out at BMO Field this summer.
Oh, I can't wait. Oh, how are you doing, by the way, on your top 50 rankings? How are you doing?
I have not started yet. And it's a process that you almost have to put a time limit on yourself for, because you can go on and on and on and second guess yourself forever. So I tend to say, okay, I'm going to give this, X amount of time, and wherever I land is wherever I land. It's an imperfect process, but that's why we have so many voters to try to smooth out those aberrations.
You're a better man than I. I am too cowardly to do it, but I need to get you on after the list is released so you can tell stories of players getting angry at you for the list. And I look forward to that conversation. As they always do. Take care, my friend Dave. Great talking to you.
Good talking to you, Matt. Thanks so much.
Absolutely. That is TSN football and CFL insider Dave Naylor. Welcome back, everybody. This is Gameplay. I am your host, Matthew Kaz. And yeah, let's face it, most of today's show was about the Maple Leafs, as it should have been, about what happened on Saturday, losing 2-1 to Tampa. And there's the two sides of the argument. The one that, hey, next to Colorado, Tampa's the best team. And Toronto, was facing, considering the season they had, the opponent probably didn't fit. We could talk about unfair, fair, whatever, but it doesn't exist. In the end, it's a results business game, and Toronto, again, lost in an elimination game. And the Leafs are the first team in the history of NHL and baseball, basketball, hockey, to lose a winner-take-all game in the opening round of the playoffs 5 years in a row. And by the way, the probability of that happening is 1 in 27,000. So all the anger is deserved. The other side is pushing Tampa that hard. This is nowhere near as embarrassing as what happened against Montreal last year. But in the end, they're out in the first round. They couldn't score that other goal. There will be questions of it factor, of having, sacrifice, of just being as relentless, as having where is that killer instinct? Those questions are going to be around all summer long. We do this at the end of each and every show. It is time now for Sound of the Day.
Sound of the Day! Sound of the Day! Here comes the Sound of the Day!
And maybe we're doing this because I don't want to talk about anymore about how the Leafs' third line and depth wasn't there, or what the hell were the officials doing waving off the Tavares goal, or, Muzzin getting his stick yanked out by Killorn, which led to the Nick Paul goal. With a power play failing them, 0-for-18 in games when trying to clinch a playoff series. There are serious questions that need to be answered, even though on this show today, it's not them giving the Leafs the pass. I'm just trying to put in context in terms of the degree of difficulty. So for Sound of the Day, I want to go opposite and get to maybe the biggest story of the weekend in terms of for North America, and that is Luka Doncic getting it done. Dallas blowing out Phoenix, the best team in the NBA in the regular season, the team that, you know, I thought was going to win it all. So I'm loud wrong. Well, let's hear from the head coach. Here's Jason Kidd talking about Luka loving the big stage.
He's Luka. He loves the stage. He loves the as it gets bigger, he gets better. And I thought he set the tone of getting everyone involved and taking shots when they were presented themselves. But I thought, again, defensively was where we set the tone.
It's an incredible turnaround, what Dallas did against the Phoenix Suns, who looked unbeatable less than a week ago. And just having the growth of Luka as a player who's still super young is great for this league. And by the way, again, a shout out to the NHL. They had 5 of their 8 games go to a game 7. The NBA's had 2 rounds. They've had just 2 games go to a game 7. You know, you can like whichever sport the most you want, but playoff hockey, certainly early on, is the best of all the 4 sports. Overdrive is coming up next, and they'll also continue this conversation of what the hell happened in Games 6 and 7 and what it means going forward for the Maple Leafs, for the players, for Sheldon Keefe, for Kyle Dubas. We'll continue on that again tomorrow, but as for now, have a great day. The sun is starting to come out, at least it is here in downtown Toronto. Enjoy your Monday. Enjoy your day off from sports. We'll catch you tomorrow. Time now for a News Talk 1010 traffic update.